You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Do you love the Tabernacle Choir? This year, the choir's music is everywhere you are. Listen to your favorite choir songs and music and the spoken word anytime you want on Alexa by simply enabling the skill.
Alexa, play music in the spoken word.
Now playing music in the spoken word.
You can also download the Tabernacle Choir app, subscribe to the choir on YouTube, listen on Spotify, and have access to all their wonderful music. Happy listening.
Radio check.
Loud and clear.
KSL Sports and KSL Podcast present Mode Push, an American view of F1, starting now.
One step. Here's what you get with this Odyssey.
I'm gusset. I'm absolutely gusset.
I enjoyed this so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Everybody, welcome on in. It is, of course, Mode Push, an American view of F1. It is our podcast that we love to talk about F1, and we're American. That's not the prerequisite, of course, to be on this program, but it helps that we both are, since that's in the tagline there. Dan Jimenez, my co-host as usual, joining me over the ether. Dan, what's up, man? How was your race weekend?
I was good. Oh, Canada. It was an entertaining weekend. The rain came like we had predicted and made qualifying spicy, at least.
So I had this moment where I have the F1 app, you know, I have like the TV Pro or whatever it is. And it's almost exclusively so that I don't get spoilers. So they'll just be like, hey, right. And you can hit it and it'll say start from the beginning and no one will ruin it for you. Okay. That's like hoping that my kid doesn't tell me who won before the race happened, right? But I had this weird moment where I shut the app for a minute when something was happening at home, and I turned it back on, and I see the wet still, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this race changed big time. And I'm looking, and the order was just getting crazy. And then I realized, I'm like, these turns look really weird. What is going on here? It somehow booted up Monaco from this year. And it totally threw me for a loop. I was like, I'm staring at the screen going, oh my gosh, I can't believe that Checo is in 18th. But it also made sense a little bit, like storyline-wise. And I like had to convince myself, like, no, the rain didn't suddenly hit. And in qualifying, of course, Haas ended up getting hit with the grid penalty. But with Hülkenberg number two, like if you would have ever said that guy was going to qualify second, and of course the American team ends up doing nothing on Sunday, but dream podium for F1 fans, maybe, I guess, when you have 11 total world championships up on the podium with Max running away with this thing again with a bird in his brake ducts, and then Fernando Alonso at two, and then Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes have still figured some things out in three. Was that the thing that you were like, yes, I love that kind of podium, or was it less like that because Max still was so dominant this weekend?
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a tricky race because he was so dominant and he was never like not in it all kind of sealed up to win. But at the same time, like Aston, he wasn't running away from him. You know, he finished 9.5 seconds ahead of Alonso, where Alonso was having to do the lift and coast thing that the team was telling him to do, which we can talk more about. But I mean, he didn't win by 20 seconds. He didn't win by 40 seconds. So the race pace analysis is coming back showing that the gap is closing between Mercedes, Aston and Red Bull. So even though Max clearly won this weekend, maybe the bird and the brake duck was affecting him a little bit. He did have that one off where he hit the sausage curb and almost pulled a George Russell into the wall there. So I think that it was a positive direction in terms of competitiveness, what I saw this weekend.
So you ended up with that dream podium. Any other like real shock, surprise performances? I think that McLaren has figured some stuff out quietly because it's like in this weird spot where we don't really talk about them. It's like they're not terrible enough for us to make fun of, and they're not good enough for us to really kind of give them any props. Have they figured something out at McLaren that we're not really giving them credit for?
Potentially, it's yeah, they're kind of in this weird middle range that we can't quite declare it as they're on their way back or not. I think what we're seeing is a lot of talent out of Oscar and Lando. I mean, Oscar's almost neck and neck. I think Lando has finished ahead of Oscar in two more races this year. And I think that McLaren has to be happy about the trade that they've made with Daniel Ricciardo, who could not keep up with Lando last year. So I think on the driver front, it's positive. And on the performance front, like all the other teams, they're making incremental improvements. And so I think things are looking positive. But I mean, we can't go without mentioning Albon and the Williams team in that seventh place finish. I think is the highest they've finished in the last 2 years. Is really cool to see that team celebrate and get all, you know, excited and amped about their finish. And it's interesting how well Canada plays into Mercedes' setup. And, you know, he was able to just keep himself in front of that DRS train, even though he didn't have DRS. He was fast in a straight line and nobody could get around him. So if I think as we come back to other tracks like Monza and other high speed tracks like Canada, we'll probably see Williams come back up to the top. And it's a bummer that Sargeant was out after a few laps because he was saying that the car was really solid and he probably could have made a push for the points. But he, you know, had his issue in the first few laps.
Seventh place for Alex Albon. I think that puts them ahead of AlphaTauri, I think, in the constructors overall. And I don't know. Albon is one of those guys that's pretty hard to not like. It's also kind of a guy that you have figured out over the years that just was not a Red Bull dude. It just doesn't seem like he has the cutthroat culture that they kind of anticipate you having at Red Bull. They expect you to always be fighting for your seat, even if, like, I mean, Checo, a guy who's in second place right now in the World Drivers' Championship, right now, and admittedly has not had great races, obviously, over the past three or four races. And it's hard when you're racing against maybe one of the best racers we've seen ever, right? I mean, we're watching history be made. I think he equaled Ayrton Senna's win record or win totals in his career, along with the 100th win overall at Red Bull. And Checo, didn't participate in any of those discussions because he finished sixth or whatever it was. And he feels like he's going to lose his gig. Am I crazy to think that Helmut Marko would kick that dude to the curb immediately after the season? Because certainly his contract is up at the end of this one.
No, that's not crazy to think at all. And when you have Daniel Ricciardo sitting in the wings, that's just an immediate, easy answer. Not even considering all the other interesting drivers that could become available. Yeah, Sergio, it starts with Saturday qualifying. We talked about it last time. He's in his head. He's in his own head. He's not getting into Q3 like he should be. And he's not really like this rain master that we thought he was. And so, yes, the heat is on Sergio big time. And thinking about Albon, like, where does he go from here? You know, what success look like for him? I don't think it's to stay at Williams long term. I think he's looking to show that he can get the most out of a car. And you know, you're looking at a Lewis retirement in perhaps a few years. And is Albon trying to position himself with that relationship between Williams and Mercedes for that spot? Or are you trying to attract Leclerc over from Ferrari, who's not having a great time? It's going to be interesting who lands in that William or in that Mercedes seat. And I think Albon's starting to make a case for himself.
When you see, this weekend, the performances of some of the midfield teams, and are we just on our way to not seeing anything fun the rest of the year? The possibility of Max Verstappen winning the rest of the races the rest of the year, are we crazy talking about it at this point?
Not crazy to talk about it, but I think that Mercedes and Aston Martin are getting closer and closer, and the second half of the year, I'm feeling good about more of a level playing field and competitiveness. Now it's probably going to take either something freaky happening on Saturday and Max not starting on pole or something happening during the race But I think it's at the point now where Max can't even blink or sneeze without Aston being right up there on him and Mercedes as well. You know, we're talking about Lewis a lot, but, you know, George, he, you know, was in fourth when he wrecked. I mean, George, that was a bad mistake on his part.
Yeah.
But I think, he was showing equal speed to Lewis as well there at the beginning. And so Mercedes is coming for him. Alonso's coming for him. We're not obviously saying anything about Stroll. I think that's the other thing too, is it's very clear now that Lance is the weak link in the team and is holding them back from real dollars in terms of where they would finish in the championship. And if you're Papa Stroll, as I don't know, maybe it never crosses his mind, but being the capitalist that guy is, you have to think, like, you could attract now to Aston Martin pretty much any talent from the grid that you
like
want.
Who?
And are you really?
Like who? You tell me it would be an amazing pairing with Nando.
I mean, is it crazy to think Charles should go to Aston Martin if Ferrari can't get their act together?
I mean, the whole thing is everybody wants to see what Leclerc looks like in a top-end car. Do they feel like they're going to get that next year? I mean, that's the other thing is I was listening to an interview, I think, this weekend, and they were talking with Lewis Hamilton, and he goes, yeah, we've obviously started talking a lot about what our development looks like for next year. We have to put together a 2024 car now that's going to be competitive with Max's 2024 car. And he didn't say a thing about Red Bull. He didn't say anything about – he said Max's 2024 car, because that's the only person you know in there. Why not Lewis Hamilton – being on the same team as Max Verstappen at the end of it? I mean, that sounds insane, and that sounds like it would be just an absolute terrible marriage. But what about, what about Lando and Nando? What about the full an Aston Martin duo with, that would actually be amazing. To me, that would be awesome. That's a guy who's being wasted in terms of talent. Lando Norris is, and he's just in such a bad spot right now, right? I mean, those guys... he doesn't feel good about things. Zach Brown, that honeymoon is over, I think, for them, and his whole love for Lando Norris. I think that would be a great pairing. He'd obviously have to get out of that contract, but Aston Martin is going in for the kill, and I think you have to find a place where Papa Stroll could feel good about putting his kid. Like, make a deal. And somebody else has to, but he has to still have a seat in F1. I could see that deal being made as well.
I'm pulling up here the contract links for all the drivers. So through 2023, who does not have a contract after this year?
Lewis
and George.
George, right. Checo.
Joe Guanyu.
Okay.
Yuki. Logan Sargeant. Magnussen. And then, where's Checo?
Is Checo 2 years? Is he 2 years? No,
I thought no. He's done at the end of this year.
Yeah.
It's saying here it's in end of 2024. We're gonna have to fact check that one. Well, I'm pretty sure it's the end of this year.
For some reason, I felt like he was on the. I mean, I think Red Bull doesn't care either. Like, they'll kick you out whenever. But I mean, that might make a difference. But
so I'm counting seven. If you include Checo, that's eight. That's a fair amount of drivers that need to get their contracts. But my favorite part of this list is Lance Stroll. It says unknown. So,
because that's interesting. It's just a deal with his dad, kind of a thing,
it's
right?
It's like a deal straight with.
Yeah,
with
Checo. Checo did. He signed right after Monaco last year, another 2 years.
Okay.
But again, Helmut Marko only likes one person on that team. It seems like. He doesn't even like. He doesn't even like Christian Horner. Like, Christian Horner feels like he's also on the outs a little bit. But you think about historically what they did this weekend. I mean, Red Bull got their 100th Grand Prix win. This is a freaking energy drink company. I can't imagine. Think about the teams that are good in F1 overall ever. Right? You think about your heritage teams. You know, your Ferraris, your Williams. Mercedes now, of course, more recent memory, but I mean, like, these are names that are car manufacturers, man. And Williams is synonymous with like F1 success. They build cars. That's what they do. This is a freaking energy drinks company, and they are maybe going to take over as being that, you know, I mean, just like they're already the unbeatable team. And I just think it's insane historically what they've been able to do. with their F1 team. It's just, it's crazy the amount of commitment they have to making sure that they're going to compete. They are the big dog. They're not one of the big dogs. They are the big dog right now.
Yeah, it's incredible to see a media giant like them. I mean, they are a software or a sports drink company, but in the end, they're a media company, I think.
Yeah.
And I mean, they made an incredible hire with Adrian Newey all those years ago and just ridden that talent and the brain power that he brings. It's incredible to see and a lot of respect. Helmut Marko, that guy's an interesting dude. He has a lot of very quotable. He ends up in a lot of articles because he'll just say anything.
That guy is so mean.
He's ruthless. He does love Max, but not enough to let Max drive the Nürburgring. So that was a piece of news I saw this week. So they're going to be doing for the 24 hours of the Nürburgring, which is that crazy racetrack in Germany that's like a 10-mile track.
Very, very dangerous as well. But they had it on the calendar in COVID, right? Like we saw – didn't we have a Nürburgring race during COVID?
So I think during COVID we had a Hockenheim race. So there's the Nürburgring and then there's the Nürburgring Nordschleife, which is the north loop of the Nürburgring, which is the really long one that people can go out on their rental cars and drive.
Sure.
So the World Endurance Championship races 24 hours around that thing, which is crazy enough. But Red Bull is now promoting a media stunt where Sebastian Vettel is going to get in a Red Bull and drive it around the Nordschleife, which is going to be really cool to see. But apparently Max wanted to do it and Helmut Marko put the axe on that and said, no, Max, you can't. Because number one, it's already a super dangerous track. Do an F1 car around that and knowing Max wanting to beat some sort of lap time and be the fastest person to ever do the Nordschleife, I think that's the right call, is do not let the franchise guy go out on that track in the F1 car.
I would suggest that if you've never gone onto YouTube and just found Nürburgring crashes. I'm not talking about like fatal ones. I'm talking about average dude taking his, it's like your rented BMW Z3. People take them out there and they go around these corners. If there's a little bit of wet on the track, most of these people are not good at, they're not racers, but you just go and it's, it's like that bridge. I think there's a bridge that's famous too, right? That's like, it's like 11foot9.com or something like that. You just go and watch the video of trucks that are too tall hitting this thing. That's what the Nürburgring is for the average person who takes their car out there. It is actually like hilarious. You're like, no, look at this guy. He's got like a station wagon. No, he just wrecked the family station wagon, going around a corner and they just put it in the wall and they're just sitting there with their hands in their head going, oh boy, I'm an idiot. So I would recommend it. And certainly Helmut Marko doesn't want his top talent in F1 taking a risk around there. Nürburgring, I think, is where is that where Niki Lauda got in his fiery accident? I'm almost certain of it.
That sounds right.
I'm pretty sure that I think there's a famous story where he
So
people taking a tour around there and he drove by and he goes, hey, can anybody find my ear over there? Like, oh, people are like, people are mortified of the comedy of Niki Lauda, who's was burned up in a really bad accident there. Anyway,
yeah,
we digress. Go ahead.
So the Nürburgring, for a lot of F1's history, they had kind of switched between Nürburgring, the F1 track, which is just a small portion of the whole thing. And Hockenheim. And so I think the one we raced at in COVID where it was just a wet mess the entire time, it was Mercedes. I think it was their big like 50 year, 100 year where they all dressed up in the suspenders and it rained out and then they both wrecked out. That was that one was at Hockenheim. But next on the schedule is Austria, which is Red Bull's home racetrack, quote unquote, a home track. But I think that from what we saw from the upgrades that were brought to Canada and the rumors that are flying around, especially coming out of Aston Martin today, there's rumors of Aston Martin saying that in the sim that this next set of upgrades coming into Austria is putting them on pace in the sim with Red Bull. How they can get down to that level of detail and certainty, as a former simulation engineer, I'm a little speculative of that.
Well, tell me more about that then. Like, how does that... like, what does not having that time versus having... it's one thing to say, no, we will have closed the gap because of the discrepancy of how much more time we get. like how much information is like dire and crucial and amazing that you're able to learn out of that simulation and out of those, or out of the, you know, the wind tunnel that actually gives you that idea.
Yeah. So what they'll do is, you know, the aerodynamicists will be doing lots of what we've talked about before, like computational aero work, and they'll come up with a new idea for their floor, a new idea for whatever. And then they actually manufacture it and they stick it on a scale model of the car. Then they put that in their wind tunnel. And then from that, they generate a bunch of data. Then they feed that data back into the simulation and they say, okay, race car driver Lance or whatever, get in the sim and drive around Austria with this new setting, and we'll compare it to the old setting and see how much time you gain. And if you gain half a second, you're like, okay, well, our race pace has been half a second off of Red Bull. We're now apples to apples with them, assuming Red Bull doesn't make a similar a jump in performance between now and then, which of course they're going to be working on, but they have less wind tunnel time based on not only where they finished in first place last year, but also the penalty for hitting the cost cap. So the theory is that Aston Martin and all these other teams with more development time should catch up. So I think that's where it's coming from, is the, just a mix of data that they're getting from the computer, from the wind tunnel, and making these estimates. And so I hope they're right. I hope we get to Austria, but man, Max is super fast there. And I feel like that they'll have that home team mojo, home track mojo going with them.
We wait a week and then we get the Austrian GP, as you mentioned, and at the Red Bull Ring, appropriate for, although I feel like every, it feels like every track in Northern Europe is somehow the Red Bull Ring. Like it just seems like, except for Silverstone, everything, everybody who shows up is an all orange. It seems like these days at these, at these races. So you've got the Austrian, GP, and then the week after the British GP at Silverstone, of course. And then, you'll have the Hungarian one after that. And then I think we're into our, no, we still have Belgium, and then that's when we get into our month off after that of racing. So you've got four more races until we really start to get interesting with these seats that are available. Can Williams be patient with young Logan Sargeant? I'm not sure. Is Zhou Guanyu long for F1? I don't know. How are these seats going to get traded around? I'm fascinated by the whole thing, but. I don't know where the Austrian GP kind of stacks up against. This feels like one that that's a runaway for Red Bull also.
Yeah, it's like we said, home track, high downforce, high speed, high downforce. There's not really a slow corner. I personally love it. You know, if I'm whatever, get in the little F1 sim and get to drive around. It's a super fun track because it's really fast the whole time. And, you know, like Alonso said in, from the Canada race, he described it as running 70 qualifying laps. It's Austria is going to feel like that too. So it'll be a real test of, the driver's endurance, the car's endurance, and we'll play into whoever can balance low drag with high downforce, which has been Red Bull's bread and butter, but Aston and, Martin and Mercedes are catching up.
All right. As we get ready for, another week in the books here, and then we get ready for another set of races in a week and a half or so. And so we'll jump in next week and do a race preview and get you ready for Austria and get you excited about everything. Dan, thanks for hanging out as usual. Your expertise is the best, man. We got to get more people on this thing, man. We got to get people going on this. We got to find more Americans getting on Drive to Survive and attack those guys. So thanks for coming on as usual.
Right. Of course.
All right, Dan Jimenez, Alex Keery, Mode Push. You can download the podcast wherever you find podcasts. You can, of course, find it on KSLSports.com. We are a production of KSL Sports and KSL Podcasts. So for Dan, I'm Alex. We'll see you next time, everybody.
It's finally time to say goodbye to the snow and hello to spring, and right now is the best time to spring into adventure in an RV from a Motorsportsland RV Center. Through this week, come check out Motorsportsland's season kickoff event and find the RV you've been dreaming of. Save thousands and even tens of thousands off MSRP and find your next adventure at a Motorsportsland RV Center today.
Let Motorsportsland help you get away.
Motorsportsland.com.
Hey, Casey Scott here, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Project Recovery. Sponsored by Reprieve Recovery. It's a podcast about addiction, but more importantly, it's about recovery. My co-host, Dr. Matt Woolley, and I hear stories about overcoming addiction and going from rock bottom to living a healthier and sober lifestyle.
We also share strategies with people at all stages of recovery, and we hope it'll help you find what works best for you, and we can support one another. That's Project Recovery, a KSL podcast. Subscribe for free anywhere you listen to podcasts.